Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit Take2Radio.com.
And good evening, everyone. I should probably include good afternoon, good morning, depending where you are and what time it is. Welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and joining me today is David. David, are you with me?
I am with you. How are you
okay,
tonight?
Now you have to speak in an accent because of the way I said your name, so for the rest of the interview.
For the rest of the interview, I have to speak with an accent?
Yep.
Oh, that is pretty hard.
Well, we can try. Maybe our guest will do that. And let's go ahead and welcome in him in because he's holding on the line. We welcome today award-winning actor, director, and let's not forget author Paul Karafotis. And I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, Paul.
Pam?
Yes.
Are you there? Oh, you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, yes, Paul Karafotis is the correct pronunciation. Very well done.
Yay. Yay, me.
Yay, Pam.
Hey.
He's got it. And who am I on the, who's on the other side of this? I'm talking to who?
My co-host, David.
David.
Hey, Paul.
How are you, David?
I'm doing fine, sir. How about yourself?
I'm a little tired today. You know, I've been running around with my son, Charlie. And he's got Taekwondo, and we got baseball following this interview. So, you know, it's been kind of crazy. I'm shooting a Criminal Minds episode as we speak. And then Sunday I'm doing an AT&T spot, and then I finish up that episode next week. So it's kind of, it's been a little, the life of an actor is, it's either it's
right?
full steam ahead. You're either so busy that there's so much going on, and then there's like 10 months of nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can make a killing, but you can't make a living. That's how it goes.
About that.
You know what I mean, David? Unlike what you're doing, it's a nice, steady job.
Yeah, if it was paid for, it'd be better.
Oh, you're not being paid? Well, that's not good.
Not at all.
Oh, no, no.
So you guys are doing
I actually
love to be on the radio?
That's
internet,
about it.
I'd
love
what,
to talk to people like you.
Oh, well, there
yeah,
you
we
go.
Love
okay.
to
All right,
I'm
well,
sorry?
Here I am, so fire away.
Okay. Well, I want to bring up your shooting of Criminal Minds right now. I never miss an episode of Criminal Minds. I absolutely love it. I can't wait to see you on there. And I have to say that there's a lot of episodes I watch through my fingers. So maybe you can forewarn me if I have to watch through my fingers when you air.
Well, you know, I can't really tell you much about the show.
Oh, no, you can't.
No. However, I know that, you know, I detect a Chicago accent. And
And
my good friend Joe Mantegna is directing this episode. And that's really pretty much the reason why I'm doing it, because Joe asked me to do it. So,
oh, really?
And, yeah. And that's why I'm doing this. But, you know, I love Joe. Joe's worked with me. I mean, we've worked together over the years. I mean, I met him when I was a young lad of Hollywood in the early days when I first got to town. We did a pilot together called Now We're Cooking with Cleavon Little and Lyman Ward, who, you know, Cleavon Little, of course, Blazing Saddles, you probably remember that, and Lyman Ward, who was, what's his name, Ferris Bueller's dad, and myself,
yeah,
there were three
of
us, and Joe was one of the characters. He would be a recurring if the show had gotten picked up, and he was the best thing on the show, and we hit it off, and he was great, and it was Joel Schumacher was producing it. There's a lot of good people involved with that show. It's a CBS show. Yeah, I'm sorry that never really made it out of a shoot, but
you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I watched a YouTube video of you and Joe in that particular show, and I have to say it was quite funny. I enjoyed watching it, and you were Mr. Studley Dudley.
Yes, in those days I was quite Studley. I was a young I was young and, I guess, cute kid from Boston. And, I did all right here in the early days. I did some damage. My friend Rex Smith, who you might remember, he and I did a movie together called Heading for Broadway. That was my break into show business. You know, Joe Brooks and the great Joanna Merlin, who was my acting teacher. She's the one that cast me in that movie, and sort of brought me into this business. And I was a starring role in that movie, and I was 20 years old. I was just a baby. I was just tender. I was only in New York for 18 months. I left Boston and got to New York when I was like 18 years old. And then 18 months later, I got a starring role in a movie for 20th Century Fox. It was pretty daunting. I mean, I didn't realize at the time, like, what that all meant. And I certainly...
Right.
You know, as life goes on, you look back and, 2020 hindsight now. And I wish I had known a little bit more about what I was getting into.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be thrown right there in a starring role for your first one, I can't even imagine. But being young, questions don't go through your head, so.
No, I mean, you want to make it. You're
right.
Young, you're fired up, you're living in New York, you're trying to get somewhere, and you want to, succeed. I remember when I was at HB Studios, when I got the movie, they were all telling me not to take the movie. And I was saying, well, you stay in class, and I'm going to go get paid to go to work. And that's what I'm doing. So that's what we did, And I went off, and that began the whole thing. But Rex and I were, like, too young. It was great, because at the time, 20th Century Fox, I remember we came out to Los Angeles, and we shot, like, all this promo stuff for the movie, and we were driving onto the lot, and we were it was cool. I mean, at that time, we really thought we were going to be somebody's, and as it turns out, the movie, never really did much. I mean, it's gotten more popular sort of as life is, I keep running into people, even I was at my good friend James Gandolfini's funeral, and I was at the little sort of after party or after ceremony, and these two people with a child came up to me and they said, Heading for Broadway, it was one of our favorite, that's 30 years ago. Like, I was like,
mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, people still to this day, because it affected a lot of people in a very positive way. That's the best I could say about it. I mean, it got me in the show, it got me in the business. I had to play a dancer. I killed myself learning how to dance. It was a lot of fun, we had a great time making it. It was exciting because the limousine used to come up to my little apartment on 107th Street and Broadway and pick me up, take me to the set every day. I mean, it was like I was suddenly, thrust into this world. It was interesting. Because, when the movie failed, by the way, just so you know, I used to get called from 20th Century Fox to come in, send a car, pick me up, bring me to the Palm for lunch. And then when the movie just didn't do well, there's a lot of politics involved, but, they never answered my calls again. So there you go.
Wow.
They wouldn't even send
you cab fare, huh?
No. And that's the business. I mean, when you're riding high, you're riding high. And when you're on the other side of it, you have to. That's why they say to be nice to everybody on the way up, because you see them all coming
exactly.
on the way up.
Exactly. Well, what made you decide to get into acting?
I just didn't know what else to do with my life.
Well, that's easy enough answer.
My mother was a very, my family, I come from a Greek family outside of Boston in a city called Somerville, where I grew up. And my mother was a music teacher and a jazz pianist, and she was a very well-educated woman. And my father was quite the opposite. He was, quit school in the eighth grade, and, was in World War II by the time he was 16. So they got together, both Greeks, and they had these six children, and they all my brothers and sisters went to college. I just didn't know what I was going to do. I had ADD or something. I mean, I was just all over the place. I wanted to be a Beatle. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to be. Unfortunately,
a Beatle?
You couldn't get in that band. They already had everybody they needed in the band. So
yeah.
That's really what I wanted to do. So that's what happened. So when I got to, I think, my senior year in high school, I was doing a play, Some Like It Hot, which was Sugar. We did the musical version of Some Like It Hot. And Kenny Lonergan, who was the choreographer of that production, said to me that you're talented and good looking, and you know you should go to New York. You should try to go to New York to make it on Broadway. And I, you know, and when I was doing that show, I got cast. Somebody from MIT had come and seen the high school production and hired me and actually paid me to be in his thesis film for MIT. So those two things happened simultaneously. I was doing the play, and that was a lot of fun. And I'd done a bunch of stage stuff all, you know, from junior high school up, but but you know, this is when the questions of life start seeping in. What am I going to be? Where am I going to go?
Mm-hmm.
So I got cast in the lead in the play. Kenny told me that I was good and should try this. And then somebody came out of the blue that I'd never met who saw the show and hired me and paid me. So I thought those three things is probably the indication arrows that I needed. And I was working for the city in the summer, and a friend of mine pulled up to where I was working at Cross Park, Somerville, and he said, "Hey, Carafotis, it's Friday." He goes, I'm going to go to New York for the weekend. You want to come and hang out?" And so I went to my boss, and he said, I said to him, look, 2:30, I got to get to the bank by 3 o'clock to get some money. So he let me go, and I went to the bank. I took $300 out. We drove to New York. I went to HB Studios and signed up for classes. Before we left, I toured this name of a family, the Greek family that came from New York, like every 3 or 4 years and visited us.
Uh-huh.
And I took their name out of my mother's phone book. I had some other friends that told me to go to Cy Sims down in Park Place, and I went in there and got a job. So I had I signed up for school, I had a job, and the last stop before we went back to Boston was to find the Jackalus family, which they lived in Glen Oaks, Queens. Now, it was a Sunday night, and it was dark. It was after 9 o'clock. It was in August. I found their house, and I knocked on the door, and Madge, the mom, she opened the door. When she saw me, she just, the first thing she said to me was, "I always knew you were going to come here." I said, I'm glad you're saying that, because guess what? I'm thinking about, like, you know, in about 3 weeks, coming here to live, to go to school, acting school, and pursue my dreams as an actor. And she said to me, I said, "Look, you know, I have some money. I'll pay to sleep on the floor or whatever. I'll work. I have a job. I've signed up for school." So, and they said yes. And so I went home. Now, I'd been gone for 3 days. Okay, I left my house. Can you imagine a Greek family, 6 of us, and there's 8 people living in the house. I had left. I was gone from Friday. It's now Monday morning. Pull up to my house. I jump out of the car. I take my shoes off. I'm running down the driveway, and my sister's sunning herself on the garage roof, and she sees me. I just put my shush her, like with my finger to my lips, and shh. And I lived at that time in the basement. So I went through the back, downstairs into the basement, changed clothes. I came up the back stairs, and my father was reading the newspaper in the kitchen, and I opened the door, and he goes, "There he is. There's my son. What do you want for breakfast? You hungry?" Like, nothing. Like, I had been gone for 3 days, and nobody knew it. Like, he disappeared, and nobody seemed to know where I was. And about a day later, my mom asked me, playing my guitar on the porch, and she came out, and she said, "You don't want to go to college. You don't want to go to school. What are you going to do with your life?" And I just looked at her and said, "I'm leaving in 3 weeks from New York. I'm going to be an actor." And she looked at me and she said, "What?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "What? No." I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, I signed up at HB Studios. I already went and saw the Jackalus family. I'm going to stay with them." So I covered all the bases because I knew my mom. I knew I had to have a place.
Right,
to live.
Yeah.
I knew I had to be in school, and I had to have a job. So I covered all the criteria that I figured she's going to come at. Do you have a job? Do you have a place to get? Okay. And I answered all those questions with positive. And, you know, 3 weeks later, I was living in, you know, I was in New York, living with this family in Queens, and I would get up every morning at like 4:45, exercise, and to go, you know, it took 2 trains and 2 buses to get to Park Place, which was the last stop in Manhattan, on Park Street, or Park Place. And I did that every day and worked at Sci Sims and studied acting down at HP until I moved into my own place in the city. I lived on 107th Street in Broadway. And what's
well,
funny
like,
about that
you're
is
one
like,
smart cookie for doing it that way.
Yeah, it was funny. I was doing Damages a couple of years ago. I was like a, I had a recurring role on that with Glenn Close, and we were shooting in New York, and I went to we were shooting on 107th Street, which is where I live, you know, and I lived in a building where there's the great writer now, Dan Ferrialt, who's a really great writer, another Chicago boy. And on that same street was Lois Zetta, who they handled John Travolta. And I had a friend of mine in that building that knew them and knew this other guy, Richard, who was signing with them, and they invited me over to Richard's apartment. And there I met Lois, and she thought I was very cute and all that stuff. And if you're ever doing anything, you know, make sure to let the New York office know. And then about 18 months later, you know, I score this movie heading for Broadway, and I called the New York office, and I came out to Los Angeles, and I signed with Lamont Zetta, who held Mickey Rourke, John Travolta, Jeff Conway, Adrian Zmed, you know, Patrick Swayze, all these guys, like a stable of actors, all these like hot, dark-headed, you know, good-looking guys they had. So it was, I was became one of their stable, and it all began. So
wow, and what a pack to be with, you know?
Oh, it was a great time. It was a great time, you know, to be in Hollywood. I got here in 1980, and it was still paradise, L.A., you know, at the time. You know, it was still, like, you know, not as many people, and it wasn't as crazy traffic.
Right.
I mean, it was traffic at all, but it was a different time. I mean, it's changed incredibly, and a lot of good has happened here in L.A., you know, the restaurants, and there's so much, you know, architecture, you know, they've done so much here. It's great because you get the mountains, you get the beach. So it was great.
Yeah, what more can you ask for?
Well, you know, a pound of hundreds wouldn't hurt. So that was the beginning of my career, you know, and that's where I met Joe, like in 1982 or something. We did that pilot, 1983, I forget when it was. But and Joe and I have been friends for all those years. I mean, we hit it off and got along. And in fact, he took my headshots. Joe was actually doing headshots to offset not working as much. You know, he wasn't working that much as an actor back then. I mean, he was working, but you know, he would do headshots. You know, take pictures.
Wow.
Of that, right. So, and I have a photo. He did my headshot one year. I think it was 82 or 83. The picture I used was a picture shot by Joe Mantegna.
Oh my gosh.
That's like a piece of history. In
yeah,
fact,
I was just saying,
there's a story.
You could put that on eBay and make some money off of that.
Yeah, maybe so. Joe tells the story because, you know, when he won the Tony Award for Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, he was taking pictures of actors, okay, previously to that. So the manager of a client that he used to do the pictures called Joe up and said, Joe, I'm watching the Tonys here, and you just won a Tony. Does this mean you're not going to be taking pictures of my clients anymore? Yes, that's what it means. Joe's hilarious. He's the best, man. And everybody, you know, Joe's one of those guys that you meet. He's like one of a million guys. You know what I mean? He's one of those great guys. He's been my family. He knows all my sisters and he knew my mom and dad. And you know, he was just a, you know, as he is today, he's great. And you give a, I'll give a shout out too. He got a little restaurant. He's got a place called Hey Chicago, over in Holloway, over in I think it's Burbank, isn't it? On Holloway Drive. And you know, he's got a little restaurant there. You can go in and taste Chicago. How's that?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, because I have relatives that moved to California many moons ago, and that was one of the biggest things that they missed when they moved out there. And I remember so many times one of my aunts or my grandma, I mean my mom or somebody, sending food to them in California. I was like,
yeah, well, you know, it's funny too. He has an uncle that lives out here. It's Mario, and he was the guy that, you know, him and a couple of partners, they had the Whiskey and Go-Go and the Rainbow Bar and Grill. And I did a play up there in like 85. I did this thing called Tarzana Tanzan. It was a very successful musical wrestling comedy. They did it on Broadway, but it failed. We did it out here, and it was a big hit. And it was, E.G. Daly, she was starring in it. She was the voice of Tansy. She was great. She has the voice of Pickles and a lot of characters now. She was just actually on The Voice not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys remember her, but she's, she was quite a little, she was in a lot of movies and stuff. She's a great girl. And, Mario, I got to be very, very close with Mario. And it turns out that Mario is Joe's uncle.
Uh-huh.
It was Chicago. More Chicago people. I'm telling you, Chicago. How do you say it? Say Chicago. Pam, say Chicago.
I say Chicago.
Chicago. All right. My father used to say, my dad used to say, whenever something was going on in my house and he had to get out of the house, he'd leave and I'd chase him, down the street. And I'd say, Dad, where are you going? He'd turn around and go, I'm going to Chicago. And so when I was doing Heading for Broadway, Rex was on tour and I went to a few cities, and one of the cities I went to was Chicago. And I called my dad from Chicago and said, Hey Dad, guess where I am? Guess where are you, son? I'm in Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm made it to Chicago. I'm here. I'm in Chicago.
Of all places for him to want to run away to.
I know.
Well, he was just saying that. He's actually, probably going to the local, the local watering hole to have, have a little libation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. So would you consider doing a musical now?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
I've done several musicals. Yeah, I've done a bunch of plays. I would consider doing a musical, certainly. I wouldn't be able to do a musical like the way I did, like, Heading for Broadway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's a little nerdy. I don't know if I can do those splits and those backflips anymore. But
yeah.
Certainly,
Neither can
Pam. It's a young man. really, all this stuff for me. Jimmy Cagney, he retired when he was 60, didn't he? 60. How old was Jimmy Cagney when he stopped making movies?
Oh, gosh, I 60? Have no idea, but maybe somewhere around there. He was good. I enjoyed watching
him. He stopped. Well, 1, 2, 3 was his last movie. That was 1960-something. So he was like in his early 60s or just turned 60. Yeah, until he came back, they talked him out of retirement to come in and do he did that movie in 1983 or 4, I forget.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of my favorites, Jimmy Cagney. That's when I was a boy, that's who I wanted to be.
To be Jimmy Cagney?
Well, I love watching his movies. In fact, Heading for Broadway, I do a little homage to him at the very end of the movie. So there's a little band thing I do, and like getting shot, like a gangster being shot and knocked out, and we put that in the movie. It was great, to have done it. A tribute to him. But I never got to meet him. I've met a lot of guys. When I first came here, I became, in a sense, Jodie Foster's like older brother. I was introduced to her while I was doing Heading for Broadway by Greg Birch, who was the Scarecrow and the Wiz on Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And he was friends with Jody, and she had come, and we had tea at the Plaza. And I was moving to Los Angeles, so she was like my first connection. When I came down, she was the only person I knew in Los Angeles. So I used to pick her up and she'd go play tennis and, have lunch together and hang out. In fact, I was her date, the premiere of, and I met Gregory Peck. That was like the first, what a great thing. I went to this premiere with Jodie Foster at the Cinerama Dome. My God. And Gregory Peck was, I got to meet Gregory Peck there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other people, but Gregory Peck was like, to me, that was Hollywood. You know, I was like, wow.
Yeah. The good old days of Hollywood. I love watching black and white films, and my favorite actors from those times would have to be Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
Well, there you go. I didn't meet either
one. And unfortunately,
of
them, but... Cary died 1 week before he was supposed to be at some place that I was going to go, you know, watch him in live on stage. I'm like, oh no! I think he was supposed to go to Vegas or something. I don't remember. That's so many moons ago.
No.
But yeah, that was
heartbreaking.
Well, he was
a good one to me. You know, I mean, I met Dean Martin. I mean, he was like a couple of, you know, like you talk about people that, you know, was nice to meet them. You know, like he was a gentleman, and I used to live in West Hollywood, and there was a time I used to walk, I used to be in such great shape, but on Sundays I treated myself to a place called Hamburger Hamlet. They had a fudge cake sundae that was out of this world, and it was like $4.80 for this, and it was a vat, like a big hunk of cake, and Haagen-Dazs ice cream. It was like, you know, I mean, it was ridiculously cheap. And it was so good. And I would go there on Sundays and play the jukebox and sit at the bar and eat this crazy, just that's all I have. It was a fudge cake sundae. And Dean Martin, it was just Dean Martin and I.
Wow.
He'd be sitting at the bar, you know, in the highball, and he'd be watching the football games. And I'd be, you know, I'd go up and tease him and say, hey, Dean, I'm going to play some music. You want to hear some music? He said, yeah, kid, play some music. And I'd say, you know, I'd put the Beatles on, or I'd put something else on, because they had his stuff in there, and, you know, but I would tease him to play the Beatles stuff. And I'd say, hey, you knocked the Beatles out of being number one with something. He had some hit song in 64. What was it? And he knocked the Beatles out of being number one.
Well, the closest I got to meeting Dean Martin is I met his daughter, Dina.
Well, Tina Sinatra follows me on Twitter.
Yeah, she follows me, too. How do you like that?
Oh, there you go. You must like us.
Yeah. We got something in common. We got a few things in common.
So let's talk about the new movie, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I have to tell you, David and I both watched it because we...
Oh, yeah.
We fortunately got to do that ahead of time of other people through a publicist that you were with. And I'll tell you, The Wolves of Savin Hill, everybody needs to see it. And I'm going to leave it to you to go ahead and talk about it and let our listeners know what it's about and your character, Detective Reno.
Yeah, take it away, Paul.
Oh, gee, thanks. Okay, well, originally, this is a bunch of Boston guys from here in Los Angeles, and, of course, there's a lot of great character. Jack McGee's in it. There's a lot of great character Hollywood actors in the film, but the majority, the director, the writer, the producers, the editors, and one of the other stars of the movie, they're all from Boston. And I had done a TV show, I think it was called, Brotherhood, The Brotherhood. And I met Brian Scannell on that show. And Brian was a series regular on that show. And we became pals. And so he called me up one day and he just said, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm not doing anything. He said, you want to come and do a scene with me in this little thing we're shooting? And what happened really was they were trying to, we had done a reading of this movie. It was called something else at the time. And it was about 3 years ago. And the director and the producer, both of them from being from Boston, and the editor and one of the other writers, they wanted to put something together to showcase their script. They get to try to sell it to make a movie, right? So we all end up down there, me, Jack McGee, it's like a bunch of us, and they start shooting stuff. And we shot all day. And what happened was they wanted me to do one scene, then I was there for a second scene, third scene, fourth scene. So next thing you know, I get a phone call saying, we're going to extend. They were just shooting like a short or a little trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But they liked certain characters and what was going on. So they actually did this movie Inside Out. I don't think I've ever been involved with anything. They actually kept shooting and asking me to keep coming down. And then, you know, the characters developed out of that, and they it became an improv, like almost an improv. We were making stuff up, and, you know, there was loosely based, you know, scenes. And, you know, next thing you know, they got 50 minutes. Now they got too much to do a short, and they now they have to, they can't stop. They got to keep filming. So I kept telling them, you got to, because I had directed, I had a short film I did called Club Soda, where I had Jimmy Gandolfini and Joe Montana. I won a bunch of awards, you know.
Yes, congrats on that.
Right, and I, you know, I just said that my experience was you should do a feature. You don't do the short. Just keep going. It takes as much work, you know. So we kept shooting, and the next thing, you know, and then they started piecing it together, and then in November I saw like 60 minutes of it. And it was pretty good. I was, like, shocked that it was as good as it was, you know. I was like, wow. I said, you know, nobody's ever, you know, I've never seen this happen. Like, you have to have a blueprint to do a movie. And this was, like, done by everybody just, like, kind of getting together and making it up as we went along. So they saw what they needed, and they would go back and shoot. And the great thing about the movie for me is that they needed to have, you know, I went to John Hill, who directed it and wrote it, and Sean Ireland, who produced it and wrote it, and also the editor on that, both Boston guys. I said to them, you know, after I'd seen that first hour, but I said, you know, it's really exciting. It's great. You know, these characters, you know, these two characters come from Boston. One's an alcoholic, one's a cop. And they create this, they have this heinous thing that happens when they're kids. You know, and we don't know throughout the movie, they're sort of, one's on a train, one's in a car, and they're coming together for this final sort of showdown. Because one of the other of them did something that they've been both harboring this secret, and we're going to get to the bottom of the secret now, who did what to whom, you know, when they were kids. And my character is the second detective, where Brian Scannell's character ropes us into trying to knock off, like, drug, you know, dealers, and we basically knock over bad guys, and we put them out of, we take their money and knock over their deal, and then we, you know, divvy up the money. And his buddy, who's also coming from Boston, is the drunk, played by David Cooley, and they all did a great, fabulous job. All these guys, you know, did a really great job on the movie, I have to say.
Yeah.
And it's very intense, and it's a crime horror drama. And so that's basically what it is. But there was one particular thing that I wanted them to do, which they did, which was great, because I said, I want a scene to show some background of this character, and I want to have a family, and I want a kid, you know. And I got to put my son, Charlie, in the movie, playing my son. So
I thought that was your son?
Yeah, I thought that was Charlie.
Oh, my God.
So Charlie plays my son. He's in two scenes with me, and that's it. But he did a fine job, and it's the most exciting thing for me because, you know, as you know, or maybe you don't know, you know, when he was born, my whole life changed. And I was with him mostly. His mother went back to work, and used to read to him every day. And, you know, pediatrics, you know, like, before he was even born, you know, pediatricians have been talking about, like, reading to your kids and playing music and all this stuff, you know, gets their brains, starts developing their brains even when they're in the womb, you know what I mean? So
right.
We were doing all that stuff, and lots of reading to him. So when he was born, you know, that's what my routine was. You know, she left for work. I feed him, you know, read a little book, take a little walk, you take a little nap, change a diaper or two, feed him again, you know, read a book, take a nap, rinse and repeat, you know?
Right.
So during the course of this, I thought to myself, like, I'm reading all these books and I'm saying, you know, this is really interesting, but I think that I can write one too. Because I am a writer. I've written screenplays and plays and things in my career. And I said, so I used to blow bubbles off my tongue. It's something I learned in the eighth grade. Somebody taught me this when I was in the eighth grade, and I've always done it. And I used to sit in my eighth grade, you know, math class, and I sat, you know, back in Boston in the wintertime, it's cold, and they had a blower in some of the rooms, like a heater that blew warm air. And I'd sit back next to that and blow these bubbles off my tongue, and they would get in the heat, the jet stream, and they would go across the room, and they would land on people's noses or on their face, and they're like looking around the room, going, "What the hell is it?" Like they're looking around, "What is that?" I would blow these bubbles off my tongue to my son, and he eyes lit up, and his little tiny hands would, you know, grasp at the bubbles, and I'd put him down and take a nap, and I'd go sit in the kitchen and look out the window, and I had this penthouse apartment downtown, and I was looking out, you know, over Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, and I'd say, "Geez, bubbles, he loves the bubbles, Charlie loves the bubbles, Charlie Bubble. Charlie Bubble. Wow. I like Charlie Bubbles. Charlie Bubbles. Okay. What happens if Charlie could blow a big enough bubble? He could get inside that. That bubble would transport. It would be like a magical mystery ride. What would it be? Where would he go? Who would he meet? What kind of kid would he be?" So I started to get this, formulate this idea, and I started to write it down, and I sent it to, like, my mother. She was a very well-educated woman, and she would say, "Oh, my God, you're punctuation. You can't spell. So I stopped doing that right away. I just would write it, and then a couple of years into it, I was at Jimmy Gandolfini's wedding in Hawaii, and I met this guy, and he said, "What do you work? What are you working on?" I said, "I have this name, Charlie Bubbles." And he said, "Charlie Bubbles, he's a psychic, this guy." He goes, "First of all," when he said, "What are you working on?" I said, "Well, you're a psychic. You tell me, what am I working on?" So he told me I told him about Charlie Bubbles, and he thought that was just an incredible idea. So we came back to Hollywood, and suddenly now the book wasn't finished. Like, I had a draft of the book, maybe the third draft by this time, it was a couple years into it. And they wanted to sort of make a cartoon out of this, and voices, and so we were having these readings and putting together this, before the book was even came out, to do this cartoon of it. And something happened. The guy got sick. The guy that was heading this all up, something happened to him. I don't remember. But I got a little depressed about it because, it was like Hollywood. A lot of things start and sputter out.
Right.
A lot of energy goes into this, and you're doing all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And then I said to myself, I just put it away for about a year and a half. Now, Charlie was about, 3.5 years old now. And I could read it to him, and he could actually start to say what he liked and what he didn't like about it. So I started to, took it out, dusted it off, and started to read it to him, and then, he started to like stuff and not like stuff. I like this drawing and not like that drawing. So now I got this kid that I, knew for a long time that was my illustrator, and I got him together, and we started to do, work on the pictures, and I would direct him into what the picture should look like, and I was saying, we want this, we want that. And Charlie was involved. And so Charlie actually helped shape and write the first, that took 5 years. The first book, The Adventures of Charlie Bubbles, came out almost two years ago. But I didn't really want it to come out. What I was really doing was trying to leave something, as we get older, we start, people around us start dying, and we see people we love disappear, and your own mortality sort of comes into play now, and you don't know how many more birthdays you're going to get to celebrate with your child or anything. Life is just, it's a miracle, and I just realized that we're all on the same train, just a matter of what stop you're getting off at, and you can't choose that stop, it just happens. So I wanted something from Charlie. I was looking for something that he could have when he got old enough that he and his dad did together. I would give him, that was a gift, that he would be able to either read to his children and just know that there was a time in his life with his dad that he shared this wonderful bonding, and what better to have is a children's book that was born out of the fact that the two of us were together.
Right.
And that's how it began. And so I gave it to, friends and family, and people really liked it. So we sent it out, and it got some great reviews, and next thing we sold, the book started to sell, and we were very excited, and suddenly there was a calling for, a second book, and I didn't know what to do about that, but I did have an idea that I wanted music to be a part of it, because at this time now, Charlie was playing the drums, and we're jamming the Beatles songs, and, you know, he was only, like, you know, 5 years old. And he was playing the drums, and we're having these, like, jam sessions, and it was great. So I thought, it'd be great. Like, you know, Charlie goes, like, underground, man. It's like a jazz. He's, like, he's into the jazz. He's cool. He's hip. He's this. He's that. He's a swinger. You know, baby, come on. So I had this little idea that, you know, and then I was at an AA meeting, and a friend of mine said to me, why don't you have Charlie go to Smartsville? And I thought, Smartsville. I love that. So who's in Smartsville? The ants. The ants live in Smartsville. They're very smart. They're joyless. And they need something to bridge their lives, to bring them joy. Well, there you go. Charlie Bubbles ends up in Smartsville, and he happens to be the missing link, I guess, to these joyless, these dance who toil for their queen, but do it in a machine-like manner, and they have no joy. And she sends these ants out constantly to bring back things, hoping that they'll find whatever that key is. They're missing something for them to... And what happens is Charlie's playing the bongos and, you know, with this caterpillar dancing on his windowsill, and the caterpillar hits the floor, and the ants show up and take the caterpillar. And in the second book, which is a little different from the first book, now Charlie inadvertently blows a bubble and goes out on this adventure. He meets these characters that are afraid, and they've been discarded by their families, and they band together, these like misfits, to help Charlie find his way home. And through that, they learn about friendship and loyalty and to be helpful, loving, and kind. And that's the theme of Charlie Bubbles, to be helpful, loving, and kind, right? So in this book, though, when the caterpillar gets taken away, Charlie's got to make a conscious decision, an action, to go help him. So he's got to blow that bubble and get out that window and go find his friend. And that's the story. So he finds his way to Smartsville, and a couple of things happen magically there and change. The queen melts her frozen heart, and, you know, Charlie once again, you know, wins. And it's a wonderful story. Now, that's book two. That's Charlie Bubbles 2 Smartsville. Book two. Okay? Now, I've been in television my whole life. And I'm a huge Boston Red Sox fan. And my son happened to be one, too, because he's had to, you know, live with this crazy Bostonian since he was born. And I've taken him, he's been to Boston about 15 times. I mean, he loves to go to Fenway. We've taken him there since he was a baby. He is a continent. In fact, he's got baseball practice tonight, which, you know, his last game. He's got a doubleheader on Sunday. He's 7 years old, and he's quite a little ball player. But he loves the Red Sox, like his dad. So we got invited to go to Fenway and meet Big Poppy. Can you imagine? You know, the children's book gets me invited to the dugout at the Hallowed Ground at Fenway Park. I'm sitting there with Big Poppy and my son in the Red Sox dugout, you know, signing books for the team. You know what I mean? It was an incredible experience. Of course, Charlie was very funny because he loves Big Poppy, but his favorite guy is Dustin Pedroia. So he kept leaning over to me going, Dad, you know, this is great. I love this. Where's Pedroia? I love Pedroia.
So cute.
Yeah.
Cute.
So we come back from that trip, and he asked me, while the second book was getting ready to be released, if there would be a third book. Now, this blew me away, because I was like, well, I didn't see past the first book. Here I am, you know, I got two books, two children's books out, and I'm like, I'm blown away by this. I mean, Joe, like, again, back to Joe McVeigh, great, you know, Joe's done, he's shown up, he's, you know, we've given books out, we've gone to hospitals, you know. Same with Jimmy Gandolfini. That second book was dedicated to him. He was supposed to come, you know, after the bombings, in Boston. Jimmy was, you know, we had set up a few. He was going to come to Boston to a few hospitals and give the books away, and in Los Angeles. And so, you know, 3 weeks later, bang, he has a heart attack and dies. He's in Italy. You know, it doesn't happen. But I, you know, the Insider, OMG, the Insider TV show.
Yeah.
Insiders, right? They did a special on me giving the books at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and they did a nice, beautiful, if you go to the website, charliebubblesbook.com, you can look it up. You can see that the piece they did on both Jimmy and I, you know, it was very, very moving, very touching. As I said, the Charlie Bubbles The Smart Show was dedicated to Liliana, his daughter, who was only 6 months old when he passed away. It's very, very sad.
That's so sad. That's
horrible, you know. But we, you know, and Jimmy was a big proponent of the book. He loved the books. He was very shocked that I had written a children's book to begin with, because we used to drink a lot and party, and we were in fights and all kinds of madness, you know, the whole Hollywood, Young Turks of Hollywood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, middle age does come, folks. It does hit everybody. So, you know, enjoy it now. But, you know, Charlie had come to me. I digress there. Yeah, but Charlie had come to me while the second book was getting ready to be released. That there was going to be a third book. And like I said, I was struck by that because I didn't see past the first one. And I said, yes, there's going to be a third book, and you're going to help me write this one. And I said, what's it going to be called? And he said, Charlie Bubbles The Fenway. That's so there it is, and that's the book. So he went from inspiration to now story by credit. So he was the inspiration for the series, and then the third book, he actually gets the credit on the cover, is story by Charlie Karapotis. So that's a wonderful story in and of itself, and, you know, like the fact that, you know, we've done this together, father and son. It's a beautiful thing. The books are really wonderful books. They're great for any, you know, moms that, like I said, like I used to do, you know, read to Charlie when he was in his mother's belly, up until like
right.
third grade, the stories. So they're great. And it's at charliebubblesbook.com. I don't know if anybody is out there listening, but if you have kids or you have nieces and nephews or godchildren and you know anybody's having a baby, The Adventures of Charlie Bubbles is a great book.
Most definitely. And with Christmas is coming up, so, you know, that's a great gift for somebody to give. Even if it's, you know, buying for, a parent is buying for one of their children's friends or somebody that's in school, how they have those grab bags, you can't go wrong with a book.
No, I mean, also, you get the set, you know, you can get the set, the three books, you can buy a book and donate it to your library, we have coupons for that, you know, you can, I mean, look, teach a kid how to read, you teach a kid how to think, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and it's something, I mean, like reading, you can't stress it enough, I mean, you know, it's a wonderful thing to get into bed, you know, look, the people keep asking me to put this on, like, what is it now? The, you know, the new Fandangle. You get the books on. What is it?
The ones
iPad,
where you narrate it.
The electronic.
Mm-hmm.
No, the electronic book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever it is. So,
the downloadable one.
We're probably going to be doing one of the three, but my feeling is that it's such a visceral thing that between parent and child. I mean, it's a bonding thing as well, and there's nothing else that's going to beat that. You know that. Touching the book, opening the book, turning the pages, and watching that happen. It's almost like it's been passed around and passed down from generation to generation. So I don't want to lose that. I don't care how, really, if we don't, you know, like people keep telling me, you saw a lot more if you do it on the, I'd say, yeah, but, you know, I like the feel of the books, and we'll see. I mean, we may do one, but, you know, right now, Charlie Bubbles' book, you can get them. Amazon's got them. Barnes & Noble, you know, so they're, you know, you can find The Adventures of Charlie Bubbles. You just Google it, Charlie Bubbles, and you'll find it. So they're great. And we're redesigning them. We're going to have, hopefully out for Christmas, all the books are going to be redesigned, and we're going to have a coloring book that's compatible with Charlie Bubbles and Smartsville. So we're trying to get all that done in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we will. But the books are up and available.
I have to agree with you about having a hard copy. I would rather have a hard copy myself when it comes to kids. I've read some of those books, you know, online like that, but that's me. I'm an adult. I think it's so much better when you have a child and you're sitting with them, like you said, sharing that time and that bonding and doing that together, as well as teaching them how to read and you know, to get educated from it, as well as having some fun.
Well, I mean, you know, they've done so many studies now, you know, about the fact that to start reading to a child even before they come out of you, like out of the womb, I mean, it's It's you're teaching them, you're communicating with them, and you're opening mm-hmm. their brain. You're getting their brain, develop their brain at that stage. That means that they're going to have that. Look, in this world today, you know, education is it, you know, and you know, as we go along, we see, like, schools. I mean, you're getting banged by everybody, you know, even a public school, you know, my son goes to school.
Right.
They want money for this, they want money for that. I mean, it's just, you know,
yeah.
you see, education is becoming like where they make the cut, they keep making cuts in education, taking music and arts out. I mean, it's horrible. So
yeah.
parents, you know, I mean, you know, buy a $10 book, you know what I mean? And you can start there and you can just start, you know, I mean, because education, the quicker you get them to learn, the younger they are, they can learn languages, you know, their brains are like sponges.
Right.
And stuff, you know, that they can learn now, you know, when they're kids and babies and stuff, it's just incredible. So, you know, that's what we can, that's the thing we can give them. I mean, if you're not born into a society, you know, like into the silver spoon, you know, where you can, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
money and there's wealth in the family, the only other thing you got is education. I mean, you know, just try to educate your children, and that's your responsibility as a parent. I mean, that's what happened to me when Charlie was born. I mean, I didn't know it, but that's a responsibility. All of this stuff, where he goes, how he's taught, what do you do, you know. Who he plays with, what he reads, what he doesn't read, where is he
yep.
going, who's he got, what team is he going to play, where is he got, how much,
yeah.
what are we going to do with that? You know, it just goes on and on and on. And you, you know, it's a big responsibility. I mean, being a parent is not an easy thing. I mean, it's just not.
No.
You know, and I don't know how any, like my mother had six kids. I, you know, God rest her soul. My mom, she just passed away a few, like 40 days ago. So
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, she was a great lady, and she was well educated, and she, you know, she never stopped learning. She was always trying to learn more, crossword puzzles, to you know, going back to schools to take classes, to take courses. You know, my sisters do all. My sisters are all teaching as well. They do that. You know, it's crazy, but you know, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have four kids, so I know exactly what you're talking about with everything. I can definitely relate to it.
Well, then you can speak to this. Then you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. Yes, they're all grown. My youngest is 18, but now they're bringing around their kids. And, you know, I try to sit down with them as much as I can and read to them. And they enjoy it. They enjoy it.
Well,
I've been doing that since they were babies.
Where's Dave in all this? I haven't heard Dave. Is Dave alive? Is he breathing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Can you hear me? yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay.
Dave is actually in New York.
New York.
I'm supposed to go do a
Top
show in New York next week. I'm supposed to be flying off to go do something for HBO. All right, I'm looking forward to doing that as well. So we'll see. There's like lots of little things happening here. We got the
move
to Savin Hill. We have the, you know, the redesign, repackaging of the Adventures of Charlie Bubbles with a coloring book coming. We're very busy.
And you're definitely busy. Do you know when that movie's coming out?
Well, right now it's just started. It premiered at the San Diego Film Festival in September. So now it's going to start doing what they call the film festival run.
Right.
Oh yeah.
So it's going to be, you know, it's going to start making us, you know, start going around the country, I guess, in different film festivals. I mean, you know, I've been so busy, my head's been down in so many other things that I haven't had the time to follow what is the next step on that movie. But it is good, and it is something that people should see, especially like that crime horror drama, you know, that genre is, you know, and I have to say that the cast, you know, there's a lot of, you know, character actors that you would know in that, and there's also, you know, a lot of young people that are in that movie that have, you know, they're sort of bust out performances. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there. So, I mean, everybody, you know, if anybody's out there and they can get to see that somewhere, or check your local listings for, I guess, film festivals and see if some The Wolves of Savin Hill will be playing there. And it's Savin, S-A-V-I-N, not Seven. It's Savin. That's a place in Dorchester. Dorchester. That's a place in Dorchester, man. Like where Marky Wahlberg came from. You know, Dorchester. You know what I'm saying?
I actually have a friend that lives in Boston, and you just spoke exactly like her. So.
Well, that's your problem. Get rid of any of those people from Boston. They're no good. I'm telling you right now. No, it's a great city.
I love my Marie. I have a lot of fun with her.
Marie.
Yeah, Marie
is
her
Marie?
Name. Marie is wonderful. Marie gallivants around the world following a favorite singer of ours, and she goes to every single one of his concerts when he does the concert circuit in the U.S. And I think she's gone to like 93 shows.
Who's she following around?
His name is Patrizio Buoni. He's an Italian guy. He sings in Italian, Spanish,
Italian.
German.
I gave him singing lessons. Dancing lessons. And she threw it all away just to make me look ridiculous. And a man in my position can't afford to be made to look ridiculous. Johnny Fontaine never gets that part.
Yeah.
From what movie? What movie, Dave? Was that from, Dave? Which movie?
God.
Do you know?
Come on.
My tongue.
What?
I can't remember right now.
Yeah, well, you wake up and go back to sleep. Well, you know, you're. All right, so you got any questions that you'd like to ask me?
Yeah, I just actually...
I actually,
before we let you go, I want to talk about Knott's Landing.
Oh, my
and
goodness gracious. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that is the only primetime soap that my husband and I watch together. And my daughter, I have four kids. Three of them are boys. One is a girl. And my daughter's name is Olivia. And guess where I got that from?
Would that be the cul-de-sac?
Yeah.
The cul-de-sac, a little Donna Miller action, you know, a little. Yes, I was married to Olivia on that show.
Yep. So how did that come about? How did you get that role? What did you love about it? Tell us.
I had no idea what Knott's Landing was. When my agent called me and said, I got an audition for you. It's for two shows. And it's a show called Knott's Landing. I was a young, headstrong, very... what's the word? You know, I was precocious. I was rambunctious. I was irritable, restless, and discontented. And I got this call to go to this TV show that I had no idea what it was, and I was not happy.
You weren't?
I was not. No, I was not happy. I didn't know. I was doing movies. I was like, I wanted to be a movie star. Come on.
Right.
You know, I had no idea. You know, I was young. I was 20. Like, you know, I had done like three movies by that point, or four movies. And I was, but I went along because I was a good soldier, and I had just quit smoking. And there was a guy in the waiting room who lit up a cigar, and I was like, "Can you put that out?" And he was like, "Hey, it's bothering you? Too bad." And I was going, "What'd you say to me?" I used to,
"Wow,
it's bothering you? That's too bad." And I got up. You know, as I stood up, get like into this guy's face, this other actor. The door opened, and the cashier just said, "Paul Carafotis?" So I went in that room, and I guess I was so pissed off. I was so fired up. I guess I gave a great reading, whatever it was.
Yeah.
By the time there was no cell phone back then. I don't remember. I think it was 87 or 88, right? So by the time I got back to my house, I had that job. And... what happened was they liked me and they liked what I was doing. And they, you know, that was two shows and then three shows and then eight shows and 11 shows and 13 shows. And they brought me back. And I had that scene where I threw the apple in Mac's face. And I'll never forget that because Kevin Dobson was such a great, he was just so cool. Kevin was like one of the great, he was just, one of those guys. He was an actor's actor. I mean, that's what I found out, by the way, that all of them were very talented actors. I mean, a lot of them were brilliant.
Yes.
Bill Devane, Michelle Lee. They took everything very seriously. They would never allow you to leave without doing the off-camera lines. I mean, they held the old Hollywood traditions up. They were all excellent you know, Joan Van Ock. I mean, terrific, just great. I mean, all of them, you know, and Kevin, I loved. I got along with Kevin. And Kevin, the great thing about Kevin was, like, you could go to Kevin and say, look, I have this idea. And Kevin said, yeah, man. So I said, you know, in the script it was eggs. And I said, I'm not going to throw eggs at you, but if I was eating like an apple, I'd take the apple out, and I wouldn't spit it at you, but I'd take it out of my mouth and I'd throw it at you. He goes, yeah, that's great. And that scene, apparently, that's the scene that got me my deal. I mean, I ended up becoming a regular on that series from that show. That was
right.
Like the first episode back in 89, right? So, and Donna Mills was just, just the lovely, woman, talented actress. You know, I loved her. I have to say that, you know, they embraced me. You know, I mean, you know, that was the 10th season of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was welcomed with open arms. You know, sometimes in these shows you come on, it can be attitudes. And I don't know, they, for whatever the reason was, they seemed to just like me and like what I was doing or whatever happened. And I had a nice, easy rapport with everybody. Nicolette, Sheridan, you know, was just a doll. And I had a lot of fun with her. And she was like, you know, I was sorry that we never got to. We only had one or two scenes. Like, I did about 50 episodes, and we only were in two scenes together or something. So I kept going to the writer's room going, can't Hal have an affair with Nicolette? Come on.
Yeah.
I was trying to get them to influence their writing. But unfortunately, Donna left the show, and that was my nemesis on the show. You know, Donna, like, didn't like Harold, the character.
Right.
You know, and she was always trying to plant drugs in my locker. She was always trying to get rid of me. And it was kind of an unfortunate time that when she decided to leave the show, because then there was a scramble as to what to do with all these, like, loose end characters, you know, which I was one of. And I was sorry to see that show, you know, them just stop writing for that character, you know. And
right.
It was a sad day in my life because that was because, you know, having started that show, not knowing, and I've been in movies and all this stuff, right, but the power of time. I had a friend of mine say to me, when I told him I was doing that thing, he goes, oh, dude, your life's going to change. And I said, what do you mean? Because you just wait and see what happens. And he was absolutely right. Not only was the money great, you know, it's something I'm living at the beach, driving around in a 59 Corvette, you know.
Oh,
but,
wow.
The impact of that show, I mean, everywhere I went, you know what I mean? Like New York.
Yeah, they knew London, you. They
wherever.
Knew you.
Yeah, like, you know, it was a weird experience because in the movies, because the movies are so big, people tend to look like a little bit more in awe of the movies. Or they're a little bit, you know, their fear comes in. Like, oh, that's the guy in that movie. You know, like, it's big. You know, it's a big screen and it's 50 feet large over these people. But on television, you're in their house every whatever night, Thursday night, okay? You know, every Thursday night. And it's not so much they think you know them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, people would talk to me as though I was like, they're talking to me like we had never, you know, we were long lost friends and picking up the conversation right in the middle of like the 11th episode. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I mean, I'd be in the shower. There were people at my stall and guys, you know, like working out at the gym, and they want to talk to me about, you really love Olivia, what's going on? My wife can't believe I told her I'm working out. You work out at the gym, you know. I'm going, are you kidding me? I was saying, can you leave me alone? Like, when I'm done showering, I, you know, we'll have a conversation, you know, thanks. You know, it was crazy, you know, football players, you know, Charles Barkley, I was in Vegas. And he's Donna Mills, baby, come on, man. You were Donna Mills. You know, it was like, you know what I'm saying? It was like an eye-opening thing, like the fame, like the power of television. So it was an incredible couple of years of my life, which I wish that I was a little bit more aware of all that at the time. Like, you know, because when you're young and you're in this business, you know, and things go your way, you think that this is the way they're always going to go.
Right.
And
right.
It doesn't always happen that way. You know, like when my father died shortly, just around the time I finished Knots Landing, and he was my anchor, you know. And so I was cast a long time, you know. I got suffered some alcoholism there and some drugs, and you know, it took me 10 years. My father died in my arms, and it took me about 10 years to sober up from there. You know what I mean? So I kind of had this lost, a little lost ship sailing without my dad. You know, it was hard. It was a hard time for me. But, you know, we've made it out through all that. And, you know, I'm 12 years sober now, and I'm feeling great, and I got a beautiful son, and my life is fine. I mean, you know, it's not all peachy creamy. But, you know, there's life on life terms, right? It's one day at a time. So that's what we do.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. And, I mean, just with what you're saying, I can't tell you how many more things we have in common with what you just said.
Oh, wow.
And one of them I have to mention to you is that my father's nickname and what he was always known as was Bubbles. My grandparents owned a tavern that was called Bubbles Inn, and my dad used to bartend there, and they called him Bubbles.
No kidding. My grandfather owned the bar, and my father was the bartender at the bar.
Wow.
My father Charlie, who my son's named after, who's Bubbles. Crazy. There you go.
We'll have
to do another show based on that.
Wait, my father's middle name is Charles.
Oh, God.
Wow.
I think we're extended family in some way. I don't know. We'll have to research this.
Wait, I can do one more.
Okay.
My middle name is Paul.
Okay, wake up and go to sleep.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's over the top of the hour, and we know that you're extremely busy and you got to get your son to places, so we'll let you go. But I look forward to you being on our new show, which I'm announcing for the first time, which is called Take Two Radio Junior, and it's going to be for the kids and teens.
Oh, great. Yeah,
we'll
sing and play the guitar. We'll sing the Charlie Bubbles songs. We'll read the books to the kids, whatever. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yes.
CharlieBubblesBook.com.
Yes, do that, please. And we'll let you go, and I'll give out all the information to our listeners, and I'll get in touch with you once the other show is up and running, and we'll have you on there.
Thank you very much, Pam.
Paul, this has been a pleasure.
Okay, well, enjoy the rest of your whatever you're doing.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks.
Give your son a hug from us. You too. God bless.
CharlieBubblesBook.com now. Don't forget, kids.
I will give that out to them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Also,
what? I didn't hear that.
It's also at Amazon.com.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Amazon.com. I don't know.
Okay.
Somebody calling on your other line?
No, it's like how it began. Did they just cut us off? Are we off the show now?
No,
not yet. We're still live on air.
Did you hear those three beeps?
I did.
Yeah,
I don't know where they...
I don't know what it was either. Sometimes we get weird sounds, so just disregard them. But we're still live.
Okay.
All right. So we'll let you go, and we'll give out all the information to our listeners, and I'll get in touch with you soon, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You're welcome. You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, gosh. I mean,
what
I could have listened to him talk all night. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine the stories? I mean, I just absolutely love and adore the stories he told about Joe Mantegna and James Gandolfini, God rest his soul. I mean, what a great actor, and to be gone so, you know, too soon, and with having a baby at home, and talking about Knots Landing, bringing it all back to me, and the new movie, The Wolves of Savin Hill, you people have to see it, I'm telling you. David, what are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely enjoyed the parallel from the kids to the adulthood and the secret that haunted those two.
Yeah. There's some messed up things in that movie, let me tell you, that poor guy Tom, but I'm not going to go into it any further because I want you to see it. It's just so good. It's so good. And it's something that you have to pay attention to. It's not like, you know, there's times that I'll have the TV on and be working at the computer and just listening, like, say, for the soaps. You know, I can listen, and I know who's everybody's voice is, so I know who's talking and what they're talking about. So I don't have to look at the TV. But when you watch this movie, you got to watch the movie, so that way you can understand exactly why they are and what they're doing and, you know, why they're at that point in that in what's going on. You just have to watch it. So if once I find out, you know, if it's going to be in theaters or if it's going to go to VOD or something like that, then we'll let you know. But definitely watch for it. And David, I don't know if you noticed it, but I was watching the credits at the end, and I didn't get to mention this to Paul. The guy that wrote this film, he's the guy in the liquor store.
The one in
the
beginning?
Remember that part? Yeah.
Well,
yeah. He's
the one
in the liquor store.
The one
that... Well, let's not go any further with that.
I think I know what you mean. Okay.
I just wanted you to know that. Yeah. I noticed it at the end.
No,
I was watching the credits.
I wasn't aware.
So, also for our listeners, if you go to charliebubblesbooks.com, there's also a link, or, you know, how they put those Facebook buttons and Twitter buttons on there. You can click on those and go ahead and like the page for The Adventures of Charlie Bubbles on Facebook, and you can also follow on Twitter as well. And then you can also follow Paul if you'd like, because after all, he's a great actor and a great author and director and writer and all that good stuff. And he is, let me see, it's at CaraFotes12. So it's CaraFotes and the number 12 on Twitter. Phenomenal guy, sweetheart. I really love talking with him, and I cannot wait until he gets on our new show, which I will not be hosting, by the way. Take 2 Radio Junior, I have to tell you, first of all, is a thought that I've had for a very long time. You know, I wanted to do something for the kids. I wanted it to be where, in the old time days, where the families got together and, you know, waited for their favorite radio program to come on and just listen and spend that time together and talk about it, and can't wait till the following week to hear the, you know, next episode or the next story or whatever that they were listening to. So I expressed to David what I wanted to do, and I was trying to think of a name to call it, and he is the one that came up with Take 2 Radio Junior. So thank you, David. I really appreciate it. I absolutely love the name, and so does everybody else.
Thank you.
I also will have, once we got to that point, I put out some tweets and Facebook things asking if there's anybody out there that would like to host the show that is good with kids and reading stories and singing songs and so on. And I actually got a tweet back from this girl. Her name is Drea. She is actually a singer who I have just played on my show, her music, this past Monday on Take 2 Radio Music. And she reached out to me and said that that's something that she thinks that she would enjoy doing. And so we were going back and forth in the mail, you know, email. And I also found out that she's in college to be a teacher. So, hello, we got a singer who can sing on key.
Right.
We got somebody that wants to be a teacher that is going to school for that and loves kids. So, you know, how much more perfect can that be? So Drea is going to be the host of the show, and she's going to do, you know, the readings of the books and, you know, singing songs and whatever else she comes up with. But we are also going to have guests on the show that we're not going to interview. Yeah, that we're not going to interview. But just as I said, Paul is going to come on the show, and he's going to read The Adventures of Charlie Bubbles, and he's going to sing the Charlie Bubbles song. And that's what we're going to do with not only famous people like actors and that. We are doing that to anybody out there that wants to come on the show and read their book. So I had a very nice lady last night reach out to me, and she's from the UK, and she has just written a book, and there's a song to go along with it, and she wants to do it on our show. So that's how that's going to work. So if anybody out there is interested, knows of somebody that wrote a book and they'd like to read it on air, or if they want, you know, Drea to read it, send me an email at take2radiojr@gmail.com, and that's with the number 2. And we'd be very happy to connect with you. Right now, what I'm wanting to do is have the show 2 Sundays a month at maybe around 3 or 4 Eastern time in the afternoon. So that way it's not too early, it's not too late, and it's not in the middle of dinner. And have the families get together and listen to it with their children. But we'll take it from there and we'll see how it goes. If it gets to be, you know, I get more and more and more people, because I've had actually some emails from publicists that I reached out to that have authors, and another one has written an album of songs, children's songs. You know, it might become so popular that it might be every Sunday, but we'll see how it goes. And we're hoping to get this started by the end of the month, possibly next month, but definitely next month. So follow us on Twitter at Take 2 Radio Junior, and, of course, the main show at Take 2 Radio, and follow David, my co-host, and my once-in-a-blue-moon co-host, Sabina, at Take 2 Radio Crew. But any tweets that come out of Take 2 Radio Crew is David, so, you know, don't accidentally call him Sabina.
Well, I've been called worse.
Oh, don't give him any ideas. You're so silly. So with that, I'm going to let you all go and enjoy the weekend. If it's cold where you are, because I know it's going to be freezing cold in Chicago with the polar vortex, stay warm, drink some hot chocolate, spend some time with your family, and God bless each and every one of you. Thanks to Paul for joining us. And
I'm
thanks
sorry,
to David for joining me. And then go ahead.
Yep. I'm sorry, Pam.
That's all right.
I was with my family the other night, and I was, you know, my nephew Sam is really into us. He doesn't listen, but he knows what we do, and he has a lot of respect for what we do. And I was telling him about this idea. Now, Sam is 16, so I'm telling him. And I tell them how we came about it, how we noticed that there's nothing on Blog Talk for kids. We don't see it.
Right.
And I said, and so was born, and I said, drum roll, please. Take 2 Radio Junior. And you know what he said?
What?
I'm sorry, I got to say, Sam is a very smart young man, and he said, that's an excellent idea.
Well, thank him for us. So that would be great because this show will be for teens as well. The host of the show is a young girl being in college, so she can relate to teens. So some of the shows will be directly for teens. And when it is for teens, I will make that known. So that way they'll know to listen in at that time. But they can also listen to the kids' show if they want. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a wonderful idea, I have to mention. And I think I was thinking about it the same time you were. But I don't know. I think I was a little shy to bring it up or something. So I'm glad you did.
Oh, okay. Well, it's out there now, so we're getting started, and just watch for it. So, again, thanks a lot to everybody for joining us, and have a wonderful weekend. God bless you all.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Get connected with Take 2 Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take 2 Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit take2radio.com.